it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now, 1850 400 964 or email focus@clare.fm.
You're very welcome back to the programme. On a Friday, we talk about the week that was in the company of a panel. We're doing it this week on a Thursday because tomorrow's a bit of a festive special. And instead of looking back in the week, we're looking back on the year as a whole. So, to begin with, a reminder of some of the main news stories of the past 12 months.
So the government I lead will be one of the new European centre as we seek to build a republic of opportunity. And that is a republic in which every citizen gets a fair go and has the opportunity to succeed, and in which every part of the country has a chance to share in our prosperity.
The priority is really people that are homeless in a bad situation. That should be our national priority and our local priority, whereas it's a human rights issue where people are living in accommodation without any water or sanitation. And that's absolutely disgraceful, and people living in Becky Cares.
When we met on Monday, we said a deal was within reach. What we have arrived at today represents a significant improvement, and I'm grateful to the negotiating teams led by David Davis and Michel Barnier for their efforts.
When somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
This was the largest audience for witness an inauguration, period.
Backdrafts was kicking out the glass and explosions and the fires coming out and debris was falling, and then there's people rolling down sheets and trying to make ropes to get down. There's a bloke that jumped out what was on fire, and there's another bloke that jumped out and broke his leg. I've never seen anything like it before in my life.
I put the three calves together and I thought I heard another little bear. Shed was there was an open yard outside it, and I just knelt around not thinking anything, and there the fourth one was standing outside. Well, I couldn't believe it, Gavin. I just couldn't believe it.
Tom Clare there from Ennis Diamond and his quad cars. One of our stories of the year for 2017. You also heard on more serious matters an eyewitness of the horrific fire at Grenfell Tower, from Donald Trump when he was criticising NFL players who protested during the national anthem, and just for a couple of seconds his former press secretary Sean Spicer insisting that his inauguration had the biggest attendance for any such event, period. And at the top there, new Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, Dermot Hayes on homelessness in Ireland, and Theresa May on the Brexit deal earlier this month. I'm joined in studio by former Clare Mayor Patricia McCarthy, by John Considine, a former councillor in Yorkshire and Hull City Council, and Tony Glean, former Fianna Fáil TD and Minister for Defence. Good morning to you all. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. We're going to take a look at in a broad sense, I suppose, at 2017. Patricia McCarthy, was it a good or a bad year?
It was a very mixed year. It depends on where you were. Some people did very well and some people have been less fortunate than others. I suppose in a sense, every year is different, but this one seems to have been just bad news for most of the year, whether it was at home or whether it's abroad. And you just touched on one of them there, the homelessness situation. And that's it. I don't know how we've arrived at this stage. Just don't know. But I've been trying to think and trying to reason why. And I think it's that we have stopped building local authority houses. The local authority are the best people to know what's happening in relation to people requiring homes, because you apply for housing and they all have their lists. They know the type of applicant. They know the number of people involved.
But did we not effectively stop building social houses a long time ago?
We stopped doing that a number of years ago and relying on the private sector to provide houses. That is not the answer for everybody. Then we decided to rely on the voluntary housing agencies to supply social housing. But I go back to the point that I think, is the local authorities knew who needed housing. They knew the type, they knew the numbers, they knew whether there were one family, whether there were single people, and they knew the composition of the families.
And they had expertise in-house.
And they were building, Tony, if I'm right, we were building a number of houses on a regular basis, maybe never as many as you required, but there was a building programme in every county, and certainly in almost every local authority. When we had the town councils at that stage, they got an allocation every year. Once that stopped, it was obvious there was no record of who was coming on the housing list, who was requiring housing, the type of houses, so you were reliant on the boom that was building privately, and so there's no planning. And what I'm afraid now is, going forward again, there doesn't appear to be any real planning. We're talking about dealing with an emergency situation, which is dreadful, absolutely unbelievable. I think people living in the tenements in the 50s and the 60s That's where we're really at, except that they're no longer living in tenement buildings. They're now being put into hotels or any kind of accommodation that will take them. And think that we're building family hubs. I've never in my life, this one is really, you know, and I'm sorry, you know, we're coming into Christmas and everything else, but I think we need to have a vision of where we want to go. To have that vision, you need to get back to know what your requirements and get the figures and start planning and get back into building local authority houses. Not all needs will be met by the local authority, but they are there to meet certain needs. And as I say, an over-reliance on the voluntary sector, because it's still the state are providing the money.
I think, to answer my own question, is it a good or a bad year, John? What I would say is that it's been a disappointing year in that so much of what we will be talking about between now and 12 o'clock we could have talked about on the same hour last year, in that Brexit is still very much unresolved. We have developments in the States and concerns over Donald Trump and things, you know, remaining somewhat the same there, although of course he's had the year in office, so maybe that's not 100% fair. But this issue more than those typifies how there hasn't been I don't say there's been inaction, because I know there's a lot of earnest efforts, but there hasn't been substantive action that's led to the change that one and all want to see.
I think it has been a difficult year. I mean, if you look at what's happened in America, I think there's a lot of people now are disenfranchised. I think Donald Trump is a very divisive person. He's caused lots and lots of problems in America. The decision on, say, anybody who was involved in, say, Israel and Palestine, the statements he's made there, there's all sorts of issues that are very, very difficult throughout the world. Going back to the one with the...
Stay with homelessness for now, yeah.
Stay with the homeless. I mean, the situation with the homeless one is, if you look at Dublin, there's 43,000 empty properties in Dublin. Why? Why hasn't somebody got a grip of it? Why hasn't somebody gone in there, looked at what the need is, and do something about it? Ireland is suffering what Britain suffered in the 80s, which is Margaret Thatcher's decision to sell off all council housing. So you ended up in a situation where the majority of the council housing in the villages and outskirts of towns were sold off. Now, you've got exactly the same problems in Britain. I just come back Monday, and the situation in Britain is appalling. The amount of people I saw in the former City of Culture in Hull, sleeping in doorways, children. I've never seen that before. And it's a lot worse now than it was 12 months ago.
This week there was a report, I think it was in the Examiner, of a 2-year-old girl being found sleeping in a doorway in Cork City. We're as bad here, Tony, unfortunately, as anywhere else, it seems.
Yeah, there are probably three factors. Patricia's right in a sense that you know, the private sector can't deal with it all. And one of the problems, of course, is that we're not building enough houses or enough units. We built 88,000 units in 2006. I'd say we'll build about 18,000 this year. Now, I think we made a mistake in allowing some of them, but I think we also made another mistake in that there was criticism that some of them were in Leitrim and Roscommon and wherever. Actually, there was a very small proportion, less than a half of 1%. And that was one of the facts that was used to undermine the big building projects, which were almost exclusively in the private sector. But two other things have happened. One is that the structure of families has changed very dramatically in Ireland. And quite often, parts of the housing need arise from the fact that the kind of families that were there when we were young are no longer the case. Mm. The marital breakdown is one of the factors, but there are other factors.
So you just have more family units.
The population is bigger, but they're much smaller units. And then there's a third factor that I think is coming into play, and I've been looking at some of the CSO stuff and some World Bank figures there last week. It just came up when I was looking at something and I read it. And it's very interesting. Our numbers employed have gone up fairly dramatically, but our income tax receipts have gone down at the same time. And I do think that one of the problems that we're facing into is kind of illustrated by the Ryanair situation, in a sense, is that we've got an awful lot of people employed at a level of wages that simply can't sustain a family unit in either food or housing. I mean, I think we're gradually moving into that position, and it's amazing that it's happening at a time when the level of profits nationally, if you look at the graph, are shooting right up. Extraordinary. And not just multinational profits, which can be a bit deceptive, but generally production.
Is that because employers understandably cut their cloth to fit their measure during the recession and are now very reluctant to give back to workers?
That was a factor.
We're in a low-wage economy.
Yeah.
And we're not moving out of it. And we're not moving out of it because we're subsidised, the taxpayer is subsidising wages. Because if you're getting a low wage, if you're not getting a living wage, you can apply for family income supplement. So that has now crept into the, apart from the grants that are available for employment, that has now crept in. So that's a support that's there for people. So why would the employer feel the need to increase wages?
Can I just pick up on that one, Ron? The point that Tony made about, say, the UK is 2.5 million extra jobs, according to the present government. But if you look at them, the majority of places like Sports Direct, 0-hour contract. Mm. So people are going in there. You might be working 4 hours this week, 10 hours next week, and whatever.
You're still reliant on welfare to an extent, at least.
Well, you have to. And how can you go to a bank? You can't buy a house, you can't get a mortgage, you can't get anything. So there's 0-hour contracts. It's all right to say people are employed, but as Tony has just said, they are jobs that are not jobs. In fact, if you don't get on with your boss or something happens, there's a situation where you're not liked, you could end up getting 4 hours a week. You can't live on 4 hours a week. Mm. Possible.
So
there are a number of factors there, but I'd say it's looking at society as a whole and seeing how to deal with it. But as I say, in the housing one, definitely we're not planning properly. I know that they don't want to increase the deficit, and that's why the councils and those are not left borrowed directly, and that's why they're channeling it through the voluntary housing associations. Yeah. I mean, that's the thinking behind it. But you need to be planning. You need to know that in the county of Clare, you must build in the next 10 years, you must have coming on stream a minimum of 30 or 40 houses every year and plan accordingly.
And it's far more than that,
and,
obviously.
And it's far more. I'm just taking a figure of that.
Yeah, I understand
so
that,
you plan for it, and you do the research. They have so many statistics that are coming out their ears.
Yeah, CSO stuff is excellent.
Excellent. It's really
extraordinary. It's really good quality.
But they're not using it. Mm. And I mean, again, there's this over-reliant on the private sector to pick up the tab. I mean, when you look at it, the various support schemes, the rent subsidies, you know, the social leasing, all those are all subsidies to keep people in housing. But why? But there's no security of tenure. I think that's the most worrying. When you hear of people in their 50s, their 60s and 70s who have rented for 10, 20, 30 years, now homeless. You know, where are we going? And we're depending on charities and the goodwill of people to solve the problem. I mean, the income tax going down is frightening, and you have to look at the rationale for where is it going to come from? Where is the money going to support companies?
Patricia's making there is very relevant, because if you look at Germany, for instance, where the majority, 80-odd% of the properties are rented, and there is a proper rental system.
It's
agreed, and you can't go and increase the rent by 10%, 20% or whatever. It's not possible to do. That could be introduced quite easily.
You have security of tenure.
Exactly.
That's what's needed. That is the thing. We really need security of tenure.
And to me, the market, not the industry rather, is there's something broken in it. And it was illustrated very well to see Den O'Brien is an economist at UCD, and he tweeted out a graph which showed the value of bills by quarter over a very long period of time. And just to give people an idea, you had commercial and residential, and they climbed steadily until the crash. Both of them then went down. Yeah. Commercial is now back roughly at the same levels as it was in 2007, 2008, and we're building, and the value of the homes being built is at the same as about 1995.
Supply is the key, is the first key, but supply.
But why are we allowing a situation where private developers are building factories instead of homes?
Yeah, but it can only happen if the developer knows that he can sell it for a percent or two or three, whatever percent more than it cost him.
That's right.
And that's not the case at the moment, because people can't afford a mortgage.
Well, the average rent is £1,046 euros a month. So where do people... it's a hell of a start, isn't it, to find that amount of money. Yeah. Mm. And it is a lot to find.
And it's probably more economical for the builder to build that type of house.
Yeah,
but why are we allowing that to be the case, is what I'm asking. Surely...
It's our government. And I mean, our government as being in the government of confidence and supply, as well as the government in place.
Says she, looking at the former Fianna Fáil representative.
Doing stuff at the pace that has been done, as John rightly said, since this time last year when we were here, is simply not good enough. A very dramatic increase in supply of housing is needed really, really quickly.
Okay.
And the private sector won't be able to pay for it.
Away from housing, and maybe just looking at them in the round for a couple of minutes, John, as Patricia mentions, the government, a new Taoiseach this year. What's your assessment?
I think, actually, I mean, he's a breath of fresh air in some ways. I mean, politically, it doesn't matter whether you agree or you don't agree. I mean, you're in a very, very difficult situation in Ireland, I always think, because of coalitions and whoever is in. And when you look at the polls, you think, well, nobody wants an election, because basically both main parties are running neck and neck, and they're all frightened that that Sinn Féin might come in and take over and be one of the parties. It's difficult because it's like Theresa May found in the UK. You can go out there and you think you're popular and call an election and then you get kicked in the teeth. And that's what happens. So I don't
think... A seven-week campaign to a snap election will do that to a woman, though, to be fair.
I don't think in Ireland at the moment it's in any of the parties in interest to have an election.
Yeah,
so I think you might have to wait a year or two.
That's why we
have a 7-week election, Gavin, will do it to anybody.
That's what happened. Yeah, that's what she did.
Not specifically to a woman.
That's fair.
And that will bring me to an area that has erupted in the last couple of months, which is the abuse of women that has.
We will get onto that later on. I assure you that. Your thoughts on the government, because you've given out about them before. Have they improved in your eyes?
No.
No?
No. Because we have the problems. We have a lot of... Yeah, no. you look at it. We've just looked at the housing situation. You know, that hasn't improved. It has got worse. We can't hide from that. We look at our hospital situation. That hasn't improved. No matter what buildings you put in, the system is still creaking. So that hasn't improved.
But you've had a Brexit deal negotiated, which...
Hold on a second. If you want to go into Brexit, we'll go into Brexit. There's an agreement, depending on which side you're looking at, depending on which side you're listening to, there's something agreed that is going to be finalised at some stage when something else is agreed and finalised. But at the bottom line is, we're all agreed that we don't want a hard Brexit. I think that's the basic agreement that's there. So, as somebody said, until it's signed off legally, whatever guarantees and commitments, we don't know. So it's kicking the can down the road. So, you know, there's nothing positive and nothing definitive has come out of stage one.
The point that I was going to make, though, was that you have so far, with the biggest challenge that is facing the country, and I think we can all agree that that is Brexit, that when you see the agreement that is in place, the heads of an agreement, that it's a staging post, whatever, that it is, Ireland's interests are at the heart of it. And the government surely should be commended for that.
It won't happen, Gavin.
Have you read the agreement? Have you read it?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you can take that conclusion out of it.
No, I suppose the point is that there's an openness for interpretation,
Grant, yeah, that's
something for everybody.
There's something for everybody in the audience. That thing that Gay Byrne had, be good to him, the Late Late Show, we've something for everybody in the audience. And it depends on how you're reading it and how you're taking it. So we have to go slowly, slowly. I'm not saying that there wasn't... that some things appear to be tightened in and secured. But then again, you listen to the other commentators from the other countries, and they're saying that nothing is agreed until all is agreed, and this is our section of it, and there's no guarantee that there's going to be unanimity when it comes to the final deal if it interferes with the rights of Spain and Gibraltar, and if it interferes with other countries that have decided. And we saw during the week now where the EU are taking Poland to court over their reforms, so we don't know where that's heading.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, there's a lot of things.
This morning. Yeah, Catalonia elections this morning.
They're voting as we're speaking.
Yeah. I'll be talking about that tomorrow.
I worry a little about the text. I must say, Gavin, I've read it. Well, there were some changes. But even the original text, which, you know, we were celebrating as wonderful, you know, my experience of Council of Ministers meetings would suggest that there was room for quite a bit of interpretation and shilly-shallying around it.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, of course, unanimity is required. So we do have that kind of final card. But that may well be on a day when the only alternative is a completely hard Brexit, which ultimately we can't countenance.
Mm.
Now, I do take, though, some solace from the fact that there is some recognition of the fact that Northern Ireland and the Republic are part of the Good Friday Agreement, and that's recognised by Europe, fairly explicitly in that text. I'm happy enough about that part, but I still don't see how progress will be made to leave the UK in a position, say, similar to Norway, for example, or Switzerland.
Yeah, outside of the terms.
I find it hard to see how that'll happen now. This time last year, I would have felt either Brexit won't happen at all, or it'll be an EEA arrangement.
Can I just say the right wing of the Conservative Party will not allow. I mean, they're in a situation where they want Britain out, and that's it. Now, Damien Green, God bless him, was sacked last night. Thank God.
Yeah.
So that's one gone. That's three gone now already from Theresa May's government. So we ended up in a situation where she has got no power. And basically she's been held there by the right wing of the Conservative Party. Well, yeah, they're leaving her in place because nobody wants the job. Okay. I mean, who would take a job if you already got a noose around your neck and you're halfway, you're hanging? So nobody wants the job. So she's going to end up in a situation where I personally, I said this to you before, I don't think Brexit will happen, because okay. I think she will fall on her sword sometime soon, and then somebody else will come in, it will drag on and it'll be 2 or 3 years down the line and there'll be no Brexit.
John, by the way, in case you were wondering, is a former Labour councillor in the UK. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Clare FM's Morning Focus.
In association with Frank Hogan, Mercedes-Benz Limerick. Serving Clare and the Midwest. Your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. Visit frankhogan.ie for exceptional offers.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Our panel to review the year still with me, Patricia McCarthy, John Considine and Tony Killeen. We've done domestic matters. Turning internationally, I suppose Brexit is kind of dealt with as well. Does anything jump out for anybody? Does anybody want to jump
in? Can I just say one thing, Gavin? Because yeah. I mean, I must say this, because I mean, my summer was planned next year, you know, watching Ireland play in Russia.
Yeah.
And it didn't
happen. Yeah, I did plan as well, yeah.
So anybody from Denmark who's listening, shame on you.
Yeah, that was certainly one of the low moments. It was, wasn't it?
Because we were so looking forward to it. I was absolutely convinced that Ireland were going to be in Russia because they'd played so well and they'd worked their way up to it.
How could you? They played so well when?
Well, they played all the way through the tournament,
no,
the qualification.
They didn't really. No. There were times.
They did, Patricia.
They played very well on
give
spots.
Them credit.
And with the talent that they have on offer, they did very well to get where they went. And now we just have to concentrate on the next round and hope they will do a bit better.
And you know, the worst other thing as well, that. That 2023, Ireland's bid for the World Cup.
Yes.
That would have been the best thing to happen.
And
would have been
it's
a low. And it should never have gone to France. Never. And I am disgusted with people from Scotland and Wales who didn't vote for Ireland.
The one thing I will say, I mean, you can make an argument from an economic point of view, Tony, that the Rugby World Cup wouldn't have been the best idea. I mean, I'm always sceptical about these tournaments generating millions and millions and millions for countries. And London, I think, is kind of
This morning, Birmingham have got the Commonwealth Games. It'll cost $750 million. So it's not a cheap thing.
Yeah, but I suppose what it would have done, Tony, is it had given us a lift.
Of course it would. And in our case, the cost of modernising the stadium was very modest by international standards. It was quite, you know, manageable. I was awfully disappointed. I mean, I share John's disappointment with the Scots and the Welsh, although I remember 1972, which none of you do, when the Scots and the Welsh refused to come to play the
in the Five Nations,
in Dublin,
really? and England came over the following year.
The English, they arrived duly in 1973, and the French played us twice because the RFU was broke after losing two home games. But I'm going back in history now, nearly to Brian Boru's time, as Patricia would love to remind me. But there was an even worse for me, and I've no connection. Even worse than the Denmark result was. Mayo's defeat once again.
Yeah.
And congratulations to your lot in Galway.
Thank you very much.
I think that was a great moment, because it was coming to the point that are Galway like Mayo? Will they ever win? You know? And by God, they won it in style.
Or are they like Waterford? Away from sport, Patricia, there was
why
one.
You taking me away from sport. I don't know, I'm an avid sports fan. I'm heading to Thomond Park and Stevens.
I see it sold out.
Ticket in my pocket.
Sold out.
So hopefully we will be in the Champions League, the final, and we'll be in the Pro 14 final. And we'll have a good year.
It's the point I was going to make. You're all right. No, I was just going to say, away from sport, there's one moment in the year that really affected me, and I had it in the little roundup there a couple of minutes ago, was the fire in Grenfell in London. And I know, you know, we go from one low to something that's completely different. A lot came out of that in terms of investigations, and then it all died away, both investigations into the fire and trying to prevent it happening elsewhere as well. That can't be allowed to be forgotten about at all. That was, to me, of all the news stories, and there's a lot of tragedy in the world, that's the one that affected me the most.
I think it was probably the most striking, and to think that it happened in the borough of Chelsea, if I'm right, that's the borough, which is one of the richest boroughs in
Chelsea
England.
Or Kensington, I think.
No, Chelsea, I think it
Chelsea.
Was Chelsea, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's Kensington,
not that
Chelsea.
Not that I hold any brief for Chelsea FC, but I mean, it was in Chelsea, one of the richest boroughs. And to think that one of the things that came out was it was a cost-saving measure that they put this cladding up. So it just shows, you know, you need quality. You can't take shortcuts.
Yeah.
And it's a tragedy. And the amazing thing is that there are so few people have been notified formally as having been killed. I think it's something like 71 or 72.
I believe,
I think that's what it is. So, and that's very, very sad. But then there's no talk about all the people that were injured.
Yeah.
You know, and how are they being treated? And then trying to get people back into their communities. That's the anger that's in the community that I follow. I keep following their stories. And that's the anger that's there, that they can't rebuild their community.
And I remember Newsnight as well on BBC had a couple of weeks after the fire had a report on a Friday evening where they went and spoke with people in the community who are adamant that the actual death toll is far in excess of the official figures. And the BBC in their report could find no evidence of this and did earnestly go to try and find it, but it showed a distrust of authority.
There certainly is a distrust of authority, but equally the fire was so intense that they have been able to identify 71, that they're sticking to that identified is what they're formally identified, is what they're saying. And nobody knows, unless people tell them exactly, that they know exactly who was where on the night and they can account for it. But it's not coming under missing persons, it's not coming up any place. But they're not equally, they're not given the number of injured or survival. So there's some, you know, that's an unclear figure. But there is a terrible lack of distrust in authority all over the place at the moment. It's every place.
Yeah.
You know, it really
that's what
is,
I mean. It spoke of, it was a visceral realisation of that. I think it's
here as well. I mean, you know, who do you trust anymore? You know, can you believe what they're telling you? It's all about spin now. I mean, they talk about the spin doctors of the 90s and the 80s and the 90s and
only trotting after 2000.
They're trotting after them now because social media is allowing them to get out their story, put the spin on, and before you know it, it's truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
And gospel.
And sadly, the materials used in that Grenfell Tower are quite widely dispersed internationally in very large buildings. Yeah. And to the best of my knowledge, virtually nothing has been done to have a scheme to remove them anywhere.
I think that they've done some, that they, where they're identifying the buildings that they're working at replacing them. But I mean, that's a long time. Many could happen in the meantime.
It's gone away.
But there were apparently, what they're saying is there were unique circumstances in that tower block. But then again, I don't know, I wouldn't believe it.
The sad thing is that, Patricia, was that cladding was done so that the building looked nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the local community in Kensington all could see the building. And so it was actually planned that way. Yeah. So they put it on so the building looked great. It wasn't out of place in a nice place like Kensington, God bless them all.
Yeah, no, absolutely, indeed.
It was horrendous.
I think of everything this year, and look at between the shooting in Las Vegas and the bombing in Manchester, they come to mind on that as well.
There's
and
been terrible tragedies, and you know,
Melbourne this morning, but no deaths, hopefully.
Yeah. but even.
But you wonder what has gone wrong. I mean, even at home, the disregard for life, the value of life, is minimal.
Yeah,
you know, and
that's
frightening. You know, we see it in the attacks. People being attacked in their own home. People being murdered. I mean, we were reminded of the murder in Cavan all during the week and the inquest around.
Dreadful.
They're horrific stuff, and nobody's asking the question: is what has gone wrong that we have this total disregard for life? I know we can put a lot of it down to the abuse of, not the Cavan case, but in a lot of cases, the violence is drugs and drugs related and. But something has gone terribly wrong with our society.
Very briefly, any highs of the year that we shouldn't be ignoring? I know we have mentioned some of the sporting
Tony
ones already.
Tony had a wedding anniversary, 40 years married. So I had a big birthday.
So there were some plus. And to be fair, you know, I don't think we should give the impression that everything was bad. I mean, improved employment figures is very good news. When we get around to strengthening the quality of it, which I think we can do, but I think we have to do. It's a bit like the housing, and it's a bit like, you know, the cladding and the buildings. You have to do it. It isn't enough to talk about it. You actually have to get up a scheme and deal with it. And I think that we're, you know, and Ryanair is a very good example of it. I think we're in territory now where we need to deal with industrial relations issues in terms of quality of life of the person. And their ability to perform
Isn't there something, when you mentioned about the Ryanair, Tony, and you touched on it earlier, doesn't it say something about Ryanair that it's the highest paid, the ones between 150 and 190,000 a year, that everybody's sitting up and taking notice of? Stop and pause.
But do you think that for 1 minute they will listen, that Ryanair will take any notice of the unions? They have said, yes, we will talk to certain people, etc., etc. But they're a bit like one of the highs for me was the banks getting found out about the tracker mortgages, for instance. I mean, this was an issue that's come down, the amount of people who were homeless because of it, the amount of treated were so badly, the banks ignored the complaints. It was absolutely horrendous. But at least somebody got a grip of it and somebody highlighted it and said, this is what's going on.
Took such a long time.
When you're talking about Ryanair, you must give Ryanair credit for what has happened for all of us, how we've all benefited from their introduction into the aviation service.
I've defended him for 40 years.
Defend him. And I mean, I'm not saying if you need to talk to people and resolve your issues, you talk and
But I still remember the baggage handlers crisis going back when Michael O'Leary was in charge and he sacked them all. That's not a way to run a company, but nowadays he's been found out to agree.
Well, you see, some other companies just made him redundant.
It's not so much about Ryanair, though. What I think it's about is that there's that conflict between delivering to the shareholder and paying the guys who do the job. Mm. Now, I acknowledge that a lot of Ryanair people are well paid, but a lot of them are badly paid too.
Yeah, and that's the same across a lot of companies.
And that's the conflict that, in my view, is causing a lot of the problem in terms of low pay. Yeah.
We will be back with more in a couple of minutes' time. We'll pick our person of the year.
Clare FM's Morning Focus.
In association with Frank Hogan, Mercedes-Benz Limerick. Serving Clare and the Midwest. Your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. Visit frankhogan.ie for exceptional offers.
We're doing our best to get through 12 months in about 45 minutes, but we're going to wrap up a review now of 2017 by picking a person of the year. I'll go first, unusually here, Patricia, because it goes to something you wanted to talk about as well. Time magazine picked what they call the silence breakers, the primarily women but some men too, who spoke out about abuse and people who had abused them and figures in authority, and it has led to the downfall of many, Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey and more, and I say well done to them.
Yeah, I would agree with you in
that sense. Social change. Yeah, I think it's really important.
I agree with you. I'm only disappointed that some of them didn't speak up a lot earlier.
Yes,
because
100%.
Abuse has been going on for years and they knew about it and they were silent. So they acquiesced in the abuse to a certain degree. But fair play for all those that have come out now. We mentioned earlier about highs in the year. My one high was the government decision to make Orkambi available for people with cystic fibrosis.
Yes.
It's not a cure, but it helps improve the lifestyle, the quality of life, sorry. But my person of the year is an Irish person, and it's Vera Toomey, who fought and fought and fought to make sure that her child got the medicinal cannabis that she needs to bring her home. It was dreadful to think of a family having to be separated for so long because a decision wouldn't be made on medicinal use of cannabis to help a child, which she was obviously helping. And she, by God, did Vera Toomey fight for her child.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That's who I...
I'm back home with the clearance to use medicinal cannabis last week, as I recall.
That's right, but I mean, she had to sleep out. She was parked outside Leinster House for how long she got
collapsed
sick.
Outside
she collapsed
House,
outside. Yeah. You know, she just fought. She was really, she was a mother fighting for her child and for the rights of other children, and fair play to her. It was the same as Gillian McNulty did for the Orkambi, but I think that Vera, as an individual, with nobody behind her, you know, she had support, but as an individual, she decided, this is it, I can't take this, my child has a right to live.
John?
Well, I won't pick a person, but I mean, I was talking to my friend in the UK and he came over here to volunteer for the FLA, and with others who came over and stayed with me for the whole week. And I would say my persons of the year would be the volunteers who volunteer for the FLA. They made Innes an absolutely splendid place to come to. They went out, they talked to people, they showed what Innes has got. 500,000 people came here or whatever.
Getting close to that, I think, yeah.
And a lot of people came to Innes and they loved it. There was no arrests. People were out. They were happy. And I thought it was a fantastic idea. And if you look at what they did, they gave up their time. I met a lot of people. One woman who'd been to London, been to America, been to Kilkenny, and came down here to volunteer. Came all over. And they made it. And for me, the people who volunteer for the FLA were the real heroes of the year, as far as I'm concerned.
The Saturday of the second weekend, where the weather was good, that was the best day I've ever had in Clare.
Oh, it was fabulous. Do you know, I walked down the streets on the Saturday night, and you would not believe there was people out there in their green jerseys talking to us. There was people happy singing.
Yeah,
the place was packed. Everybody was happy. If you could recreate that throughout the world, what a wonderful place it would be.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because it would have been a shame if we had otherwise neglected it, which we would have done. So well done to you, John, for that this morning. Tony?
I had chosen the same one as you chose, Gavin, but for a slightly different reason. Obviously, the people coming out and speaking was huge, but Asia Argenta, who organised about 100 people to put it all together, because this story had been public a few times in the last 10 years, and some of these people had come out as individuals and had been ignored. And I think the real significance of it, though, is that bullies of every kind, sexual predators, all of them, will have to take a step back and say, I'm going to be found out, you know, this behaviour could cost me. And I think that's really what's significant about what those women did.
It is how
particularly
it
the ones who put it out there.
Yeah, it's how it has brought others out of the woodwork. Yeah. We've seen one high-profile case in Ireland.
Yeah, slightly different circumstances there now.
Yes, absolutely.
But bullying or alleged bullying.
But the point is that it empowered people to speak out. Yeah. And I think it's only the start of it. I think it's only the start of it. That's about it, so. I want to thank you all very much. I've really enjoyed the last little while.
And can we wish everybody a very happy Christmas?
Absolutely.
We can indeed. Happy New Year. Absolutely. Happy New Year. And I wish it to you and each and every one of our regular contributors across the year. Tony Killeen, John Constant and Patricia McCarthy. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Happy Christmas.
Clare FM's Morning Focus.
In association with Frank Hogan, Mercedes-Benz Limerick. Serving Clare and the Midwest. Your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. Visit frankhogan.ie for exceptional offers.